Well, the data that we get from YouTube says don't put too much into one single discussion. And as a result, we stopped our first interview with Dr. Franz Cronier at around 25 minutes. But there's a heck of a lot more on the research that the Social Research Foundation's been doing. So here's part two. Franz, you made some extraordinarily strong points about the Government of National Unity. Just to summarize, and this was in part one of our discussion, just to summarize that the GNU is, the parties in the GNU are doing well. It's 100 days in, all is good, but there are dangers to those who are supporting it, and they're very real dangers. Unless there's delivery in the next year or perhaps 18 months, and the delivery would be through jobs, then there could be a very different future to the one that everyone's getting so excited about right now. But let's go a little deeper into your research and pick up, perhaps, if you would, on what's happening on the international front. How are foreigners seeing South Africa?
Yeah, and South Africans seeing foreigners. I think the strategic importance of South Africa's is already, because it will become so much greater than I think a lot of South Africans understand. This year, as you know, is this year of all these elections around the world. And one of the most important was in the Solomon Islands, which sit to the east of Australia. And the result in that election might have been part of a process of progression towards those islands one day enabling a Chinese naval facility. If that happens, Australia is cut off from the protection of the American Navy at Pearl Harbor in the Pacific. A few days ago, Keir Starmer allowed the Chago Islands to be ceded to Mauritius. Now, at Chago, there's an island called Diego Garcia. And on Diego Garcia, there's a very important Western military facility that allows Americans, for example, to project power across almost half of the world. You could fly fly a nuclear bomber from Diego Garcia. And the inevitable consequence of the decision on Chago is that the presence of that Western facility will become under pressure over the next 10 or 15 years and might be removed. And so the strategic balance of power in both as regards the Pacific and the Indian Oceans is shifting very rapidly. South Africa is very, very important here, whether it remains if indeed it is that, a Western ally, whether it remains, if it is that, increasingly a Chinese and Russian allied state. And the reason is it guards the entrance, one of the entrances to the South Atlantic. The Chinese have expanded very effectively into the Solomon Islands and onto Africa's east coast, the naval facility at Djibouti, attempted to advance into the Mediterranean, places like Haifa and Italy and Greece, what one American analyst called stepping stones to one day rule the Atlantic. And they've been blocked in a sense, and they now would have a strategic interest in coming down the east coast and turning around onto the west coast, which is the South Atlantic coast. Now, the South Atlantic hosted key opening exchanges of the First and Second World Wars. The sinking of the Pacific Cruiser Squadron Germans in the First War and the scuttling of their flagship in the Second freed up, saw the Allies command the South Atlantic, which in turn allowed command of the North Atlantic and determined the outcome of the war. Mrs. Thatcher sends her battle group to the Falklands, not just because of national pride, but because of its immense strategic importance. If you were to sail from the American analyst made this point, a submarine or some such thing from a port like Bata in Equatorial Guinea, you're closer to New York than if you had a base in Hawaii. And the next stop is the American West Coast. Down Africa's West Coast, there's Bata in Equatorial Guinea. Then there's Luanda in Angola, Lobito in Angola, where Mr. Biden was due to visit. Now, because the Americans have a project at Lobito. Namib, Walvis Bay, which Castro was so afraid of, and the Soviets too, that the little South African submarines could sink the supply ships that were coming into Luanda during the Bush War. And then the jewel in the crown, Simonstown. If something goes wrong, I'm going to get to the data now. If something goes wrong at Suez, a vast share of global bulk shipping needs to move between the 50th and 60th parallels off the coast of South Africa. So you'd like to command this. So where do South Africans stand on this? Over time, we see what we think is a drift in South African public opinion away from an allegiance with the Western world towards a growing empathy for Russia and China, for example. So here's a question we've just asked. The GNU should align South Africa's foreign policy with countries like Russia and China and Iran and against the West. And the answers there were that let me work it out. Just under 40% of South Africans now agree that that is what the South African government should do. Disagreeing is just over 50%. So this is almost evenly split. Then we asked another question, which was, we'd made a statement. Statement is false. Politicians all make false statements. So we said, given that Russia and China provide more investment, do you agree that Russia and China now provide more investment and create more jobs in South Africa than do the US and the European Union? Is this correct? And here, a very important thing happens, because now just short of 60% of voters say that they agree with that statement. And so you can start to see the new South Africa, 94 South Africans, born, as a very brilliant German now colleague, James Myburg, explains, in a unipolar world, the Soviet Union had been defeated. The end of history thesis in the Western world was taken to mean that the liberal democratic order had won, its last great challenger gone, and liberal order would spread around the world inevitably. And South Africa's born into that climate of opinion, and hence initially the young democracy is quite strongly allied with the Western world. The ANC has to practice discretion. Its big backer in the Soviet Union is no longer there. It's had a difficult relationship historically with China. It delays the recognition of China for a number of years, even the ANC. Now we're in a multipolar world, and as Western influence to an extent retreats, or Western politicians are embarrassed of projecting power into the world, that believe their societies are inherently illegitimate, built on, as they say they are, on pillars of colonial exploitation and the like, the multipolarity accelerates. And as it accelerates, South African government is emboldened because it's a different strategic environment. And as the South African government is increasingly emboldened, we now get the stunning result where an absolute majority of South Africans would believe if they were told that Russia and China is now more important to the economy and the lives of people than is the West. That is a real failure of Western diplomacy. And given the admittedly very long story I gave you about these oceans, the importance of this, I find it staggering that this isn't more talked about or thought to be very, very important. We think it is.
What is the fact, if you were to tell us or to have a statement which is accurate, how is the difference between the creation of jobs and importance to the South African economy of the Western world versus Russia and China?
If you measure something like job creation or fixed investment, for example, which is a fixed investment, perhaps the best one to measure, because that's real commitment. The West's contribution to South Africa's economy dwarfs that of Russia and China at this time still. That may also change in time. But the statement, as we put it to, we did it deliberately, of course, we wanted to see. The statement is false, as we put it to voters. But we wanted to see what they respond to. And we know we've tracked these things over time too. So over time we're seeing the opinion. I think we're seeing the opinion slip in favor. And if you let me say one more thing. I said to someone recently that for in that unipolar world, it would have made quite a lot of sense if you didn't think much about things to say South Africa would be well off if it copied the ideas of Western democracies. For a lot of liberal thinkers who are invested in the idea of Western liberal democracy and Western liberal order, they evade the fact that that is no longer true. Because on something like energy policy, for example, South Africa's young government would be far better off listening to the advice of Moscow and Beijing than Washington and Brussels. And on something like the importance of merit in societies above identity-based hiring practices or whatever, just as a simple question of competitiveness, South African government would again do well to take its lead from Beijing more than it would from, at times now, not entirely, from Brussels or Washington. So that's perhaps a final point to make. There's this huge strategic importance around South Africa. The balance of power is completely shifted with the Solomon Islands and now Diego Garcia. The South Atlantic is the next great terrain of contestation. Domestically, opinion in South Africa is slipping away from the West towards Russia and China as the multipolar order dominates and replaces the former unipolar order. And I would challenge, and then you can have a very good debate, a liberal Western thinker, it is no longer correct that the default position is that South Africa would be better to follow the full buffet of advice from Western democracies, and that will make the country successful and prosperous and competitive. Add all these things together. Fascinating.
I have to open our minds very much, but perhaps you could give us your insight on what will happen post the American presidential election as far as South Africa is concerned. And if we look at the markets, if we look at the betting markets directly and the Wall Street as a whole, they are discounting a Donald Trump victory. So I'm going to assume that the markets have got this one right. Donald Trump is close to Elon Musk. Elon Musk is having a little bit of a bromance, as we know, with Ramaphosa. Donald Trump has a different approach to Russia and China to the one that his opponent in the election has. If Trump were to win, would there be a possibility that the trends that you are discussing would be accelerated and indeed that the more autocratic model that we see in Hungary, for instance, in Europe and Russia and China, become more entrenched in a South African scenario? Just a thought on that to close off this conversation.
I don't know. I think Trump makes for a much safer world because the deterrence capacity that would come from a Trump presidency would, as Mr. Trump is likes to say, when he was in charge, Russia invaded no one. So I think the world becomes a safer place. I think Western projection of influence is increased. I think under a Harris presidency, you'd likely see a further retreat. You see, the trouble for so many Westerners who grew up in the end of history era, when, if, let's say you grew up in the last 30 or 40 years, you were went to university and joined the civil service or the foreign office or whoever you worked for, you're Western. You were taught that the West had won, the liberal order had triumphed, the last threats had gone away, deterrence, the threat of consequences, sometimes forceful consequences, was no longer primary in your foreign policy arsenal, and you started to think maybe we could just be nice, and indulgent, and if our foreign partner is upset with us, maybe we've done something wrong and we should back off. I think that sort of sentiment is visible deeply across the foreign services of the foreign policy divisions of Western democracies. I don't think Mr. Trump buys into it entirely. So that's step one on him. I don't know who's going to win the election. We've tested it twice. I mean, we've taken poll averages, and we will probably do that again in the next 10 days. But Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, I think if he is on top of all of those, I don't see a way for Harris to get through. But this is also much within, at least Pennsylvania, still so much within the margin of error that it is very difficult to say. A Trump U.S. administration, I think, would see Africa and Southern Africa as a strategic issue. I think, and it's not entirely true, but I think a Harris administration would fall into that trap that many Americans have done, perhaps well-intentioned, that Africa is somewhere for them to come and help. It's a moral issue. And I think South Africa's interests are served best by being treated as a strategic issue, and because the correct foreign policy I would advise for South Africa to take is one of genuine non-alignment, in which you realize the vast strategic importance as a government of particularly your West Coast, and you realize the vast importance of what's happened at Diego Garcia, and you trade the great powers off against each other in exchange for trade and related concessions. And I mean, if that I think would be the most sensible thing for any future foreign ministry to do.
Well, it does appear as though Cyril Ramaphosa, at least publicly, is aligned with that approach, the non-aligned approach. Frantz Grenier is the chairman of the Social Research Foundation. Frantz, thanks, man. It's been fascinating getting these two interviews in one day with you, the one on the local seed, the other one on geopolitics, and they're both of just so such deep importance to those of us who live in this country and hope only the best for it. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.